You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Well, we all got on the school bus at the Coxwell Station yesterday morning and headed out into the countryside about 100 kilometers north and a bit west of Toronto into Dufferin County, not that far from Shelburne, if you know where Shelburne is, up Highway 124 into the Melanchthon Highlands. You climb and you climb and you climb until finally you reach the highest point in southern and central Ontario, right there. And it's 15,000 acres of some of the most incredible farmland in the world. We were quizzing the farmers today about that, and we certainly know it's Class 1 farmland, but David Vanderzag, who's one of the leading farmers in the area, when you pin him right down, he's a very modest guy, when you pin him right down, it's probably the best farmland in the world because of its unique nature. We can talk about that a little later. It was an interesting voyage for people, and there were people on the bus, including at least one politician, who'd never really been to a farm, never really gotten that far out of the city. And so it was an education for everyone, and it's a way to put put some detail to this issue that you've been hearing about for some time now. One of the MPs along was Craig Scott. He's the New Democratic Party MP for downtown's Toronto, Danforth. And after a day in the countryside, talking to people who live there, talking to some constituents from the city who went along on the bus ride, and listening carefully to what farmers had to say about the precious nature of the land there, I asked him to kind of put that all together and describe what he saw that day.
I have to say that it feels like we've taken a very short visit to God's country. There are many versions of God's country in this country of Canada, but I mean, this is such a special area. And the tutorial that we've just received on the very special, if not unique, soil qualities of the farmland up here, any sane person would really, really question the possibility of even a small quarry, let alone a mega quarry here.
But to Dave Vanderzag's point and Carl Kosak and everybody else who've been living this for so long, they say, well, even with a smaller quarry, if you punch holes in exactly. The water table, and the water being used now to irrigate this field or to disappear. So in other words, farming would end here anyway over a longer period of time.
That's right. We've learned a little bit about exactly those that geological fact, which is we're looking at an aquifer that's all interconnected. And the idea that the quarry could exist on the 2,800 acres that this company wants to use and not affect everything else is itself, frankly, asinine. And I've just been shocked by some of the arguments that they're willing to put in their application about what will not be affected and what they promise they can do. They can pump pumps indefinitely until the end of time is effectively what they have to promise. For example, the idea that they're going to pump back water into the water table that's uncontaminated as some sort of a guarantee. This is craziness. And I have nothing but admiration for the people up here who show yet again that when you're affected by really powerful forces, you can not only analyze the situation better than anybody else, but you can actually reach people with your arguments, and that's what they've done. It's really, really admirable.
Not with anger and outrage, but with solid, factual arguments.
Solid, reasonable. Yeah. Obviously, there's emotion and passion, but again, solid, reasonable arguments. You've put it really well. And fighters, but not striking out wildly. And I think that's why there's a really good chance that as long as the environmental assessment process in Ontario is not somehow distorted in ways I don't know, I honestly could not imagine how this can be approved.
What's And there's no role for the federal government to play here then. I mean, that's a kind of a sensitive question, I know.
Well, I don't particularly see it as sensitive in the sense that I think there should be.
I guess the government sees it as sensitive.
That's right. Yeah. I think it's important to know that in the House, Minister Peter Kent, Minister of the Environment, has already said that he's been advised by his officials that there is no federal trigger. That is, there are no interests in this situation that the federal government environmental legislation protects against. And frankly, I've already sent in a whole series of questions that I want answered by the Ministry of the Environment on how that can possibly be the case when we're looking at headwaters of five rivers, when we're looking at fish, when we're looking at a bunch of other things that suggest that there is a federal dimension. We'll see. It could be that they're ahead of the game. They're already applying the gutted environmental legislation that just went through with the latest federal budget, which has very minimal triggers compared to what the current enforced legislation has.
Well, the people up here are worried about all the fishery aspects of this as well.
Right.
The fish habitat that they feel would be, because of these changes right. in the Fisheries Act, essentially ignored.
And this is what's important to know, is that fish remains one of the protected interests in the federal legislation, even after the new legislation. But there are qualifications that require that fish to be commercial, or fish that is eaten by commercially fished fish. It's as narrow as that. And so have they made the assessment in the Federal Ministry of the Environment that this fishery is not commercial? Maybe they have. But the idea that just because you're not commercial fishery in a certain sense, mm-hmm. that you shouldn't be environmentally protected federally, again, is crazy.
Do you think if more people could actually come up here and look at all of this, that they could even remotely ignore the fact that this is a pretty serious central problem we have here?
I don't think anybody could ignore it. I think, and frankly, I would say you don't even have to visit. It's just so clear, especially with quality briefing material and people when they speak to you about the situation. People understand it. They get it. I've not met a single person in the two ridings I've had a lot of connection with in downtown Toronto, in the east end of Toronto, who don't get it. And I think the thing that's really important to note, quite apart from all the environmental impacts, the loss of arable land in a world where food security is year by year a more pressing issue, that alone has to be a reason to say, do not use arable land, especially of this quality, for this purpose. If you're going to need limestone, if we're going to need limestone, we have to find it somewhere else.
I think David van der Zegg had to be kind of pushed into the admission when he's talking about the beauty of the soil, but had to concede in the end of the argument, this is probably some of the very best farmland in the world.
Right. I think he's a modest guy. And so I'm not sure if it was a concession, but just he didn't come up with it on his own.
Yeah.
But he listed seven factors that makes this farming, this soil in conjunction with its location and weather conditions, amongst the best anywhere. But the soil is amazing. I just picked it up. The honeywood silt loam, as it's called. I know a little bit about soil, having grown up in a rural area of Nova Scotia, and it really is amazing. It is incredibly rare that you have soil that has multiple properties of sand and more mud-like or clay-like soil, and that's what this is.
In the mining business, it's known as overburden.
Overburden, okay, I didn't know that. Very good point.
Well, it's just a different way of looking at it. It's just something that's in the way, and the burden has to be removed before you mine the limestone. More voices coming up soon from Melanchthon Township.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
We were shown around, as usual, when you go to Melanchthon Township by the big tall guy in the white Stetson, and that, of course, is Carl Kosak. He's the chairman of the North Dufferin Agricultural and Citizens and Task Force, doing the best it can to, along with the people who are joining the movement, fight against this particular project. And it is an absolutely unprecedented project where 16 giant pumps, after this open pit mine is fully executed, will have to pump in perpetuity
the water to keep that hole from filling up, because all the groundwater, which is the mine is below the ground, the water table, so the water rushes down into the hole then to be pumped out later. Highland Company said, well, no, it's been done before. It's been done in the Holland Marsh. But then again, Gary Hunter, an engineer who's been working with the NDAC people, he's had a very, very close look at it. And he says, well, no, they're not the same at all. First, you have to talk about scale. And we've talked about 600 million liters of water to be pumped every day. Gary Hunter speaks in terms of cubic meters of water, just so you'll understand the difference. And here's what he said. The average 16,000 cubic meters discharge per day at Holland Marsh is pumped 8 feet in height, okay? But with the Highland companies, it would be pumping 600,000 cubic meters, a height of 200 feet on a perpetual basis. So the comparison, at least according to Gary Hunter, is absolutely ridiculous. No comparison at all. But Carl Kosak, in talking to us yesterday and showing us the great expanse of land, you know, on one side of the road, you've got the Niagara Escarpment lands, totally protected. You step 1 foot in the other direction, and that's proposed quarry land. So, no, it's not on the Niagara Escarpment. It's just butt joined to the escarpment, that's all. But he was talking about, well, what would happen with this perpetual thing if, in fact, at some time in the future, the company disappears, there's nobody around, it falls to the government to keep the pumps going, and at some point the government says, we're not doing this anymore. We're stopping the pumps. What would happen? Well, the groundwater would fill the lake. And what effect would that have? Well, that's what I wanted to talk to Carl Kosak about. We were just standing and watching the watering of the potato fields at David van der Zeg's farm from some of that water in the karst underneath the land there. Just proof positive of how important that water is. And so we talked about that. Well, what do you think? What's your impression now? A very good busload of very inquisitive, interested people here.
Yeah, that's the impression. Very inquisitive. And it's nice to have folks here who work in the municipal bureaucracy as well as provincial and federally. And it just highlights this is sort of not a local issue at all. Food security and, you know, water is a big deal to everybody.
And you can't fight it. As many as of the people who are very interested and concerned right here, you can't fight it alone. It's got to be a big bunch of people.
Yeah, in the big picture, Dale, reason will prevail. The facts around this application are so bad, and we're so grateful folks make the effort to get involved, because in the end, you're right, we need a lot of people to keep raising the awareness about this issue and just drive better policies, be it municipal, provincial, or federally. You know, we just need a better job done.
You've talked to a lot of people, you've talked to a lot of politicians, a lot of interested parties, a lot of corporate types. Are you getting the impression that you're making some progress?
Well, the really curious part, Dale, is I have yet to find somebody who can make a legitimate case for this application to be good for the province. Nobody does that. And by the sheer fact that nobody can do it, it shows you that this just shouldn't happen. So we think we make just a ton of progress.
I thought I knew all of the scenarios, having talked to you for a long time now and talked to others, talked to area farmers. I hadn't thought about this one eventuality you talked about. What if at some point in the future those pumps shut down because some government says after a company is long gone, we're not going to afford the price it's going to pay to keep that thing pumped out and let a lake develop? What happens then?
Well, we had an engineer look at that, and the report in the end was this, that it'll take 15 years to fill this giant hole. And which would mean that for 15 years, this high point in Ontario would not release water downstream, and everyone is downstream from here. So I can only imagine if the surrounding, you know, for tens and tens of kilometers, if there's no groundwater feeding anything, this will just be a really ugly part of the world.
This will be like a dust bowl. It'll dry up.
Well, that's a better word for it. That's exactly how we would see it. So if they allow it, then they're committed to maintaining it forever. And I think every person in the province will look at commitments that require you forever as being a really subject.
Kind of a long time.
Yeah, a very long time.
That's Carl Kosak. Yes, indeed it is. And we're standing on the Vanderzag farm, and there's a bush out behind his farm. That's, in fact, where part of food stock was held last year. And in the bush are locations where they draw water from the karst underneath the ground and use it to irrigate their fields with these giant sprinkler systems. So the field is irrigated, the water goes down, seeps through the karst, and is a continual circle of water that grows some of the best potatoes known anywhere. Grows in part, if you add up all the farmers' contributions, more than half the potatoes consumed right here in the GTA. So if this giant hole happens, the very first thing that happens, farmers are worried about, their own wells will dry up right away. And then, of course, if it, at some point the pumps no longer pump at some point in the future where it's deemed to be not economically viable, then the water direction will be only to fill up the hole. There'd be no water to water crops. There would be no water flowing downstream into those five major rivers that are fed by headwaters right in that land. So you would have a drying effect. It would certainly mean 15 years, that's the end of farming, the end of this wonderful farming area in the province of Ontario, making us even less wealthy in terms of land we can use to grow the food that we eat. Peggy Nash was with us on the bus as well. She's the New Democratic Party member for Parkdale High Park and a former leadership candidate, of course, in the last leadership round. And she's a city woman. She's not a country girl. And back on the bus, bouncing our way back towards Toronto, I asked her about her impressions of what she had seen.
Well, Peggy Nash, here we are sitting at the back of the bus, coming back from the countryside. What's going to stick in your mind about what you saw?
What stays in my mind is, first of all, how magnificent this land is. It's so rich agriculturally, and to see the pure, wonderful water. It's at the headwaters of five rivers. And then the absurdity of destroying all that. It's absolutely unbelievable.
You had come up here for food stock last year, as 25,000 of your closest friends did as well. And yet this is quite a different trip, isn't it, where you actually get to see really the nuts and bolts of where this giant hole would go and what kind of an effect it would have on the countryside.
Yeah, you know, I had read about the mega quarry proposal. I had heard about it, talked to people. I have a no mega quarry sign on my front lawn. But and I was here at Foodstock, but you know, when you've got 26,000 people in one spot, it's difficult to actually see the spot.
Yeah.
So today we were talking with the farm families that live here and actually had a chance to pick up the soil and understand what it grows. We filled our water bottles with the fresh spring water. We saw the plants, the potatoes, the broccoli, the Brussels sprouts. And when you see how wonderful this land is and what a scarce resource it is in the province of Ontario and how we need this for our food and water sustainability, the absolute absurdity of destroying it for a quarry which could be built someplace else, although the whole concept of this mega quarry, it kind of defies logic, but to do it here in this prime agricultural land is ridiculous. We can't let it happen.
But what are we going to do about it? I mean, you know, a number of the processes that are now underway, a provincial environmental assessment, maybe no action from the federal government, but maybe ultimately that's for the best. What would you do if you could?
Well, you know, we need a thorough environmental review. That would be the first step. Something that takes into account the impact on fish habitat, on our water basin, on our food security, something that really, truly measures the impact of what this quarry would create, so that we can make a proper decision. Because once you destroy this land, you don't get it back. You've only got one chance here to get it right, and if you make the wrong decision, it could damage our food security and water security for years to come. It's not reversible.
Were you impressed by what you heard from the farmers?
The farmers were amazing. You know, we heard one couple, the Armstrongs, who said that this company came in and put a check on their kitchen table that had so many zeros on it. And it kept them up at night. They thought about it. It was so tempting, because their fear was if they didn't sell out, then perhaps the mega quarry would go ahead and their land would be next to worthless. So it's a big risk for them. But then they just realized in their gut what they had to do. They had to defend their property, defend the land for everyone here. And they made a decision of conscience. And you always hope when you have that opportunity that that's what you do. But they certainly rose to the occasion.
But I think a lot of people should rise to this occasion, should they not? Even people in the city who, you know, they don't see these situations close up, but in effect, it'll affect a wide, wide group of people if this thing goes through the way it's supposed to go through right now.
Well, it will affect people in all of southern Ontario, because this is, as I said, the headwaters of five major rivers, so it will affect our water base, and in a way that we don't really know fully yet. That's why we need an environmental assessment that hopefully would lead us to make the right decision, which is to protect this scarce resource. You know, I'm a city person. This was the first time I'd ever seen an actual potato plant in the ground.
Is that right?
It's the first time I'd seen Brussels sprouts in the ground. And you know, I've seen them in a supermarket, and in a supermarket, and even in a farmer's market, but I've never seen them in the ground. And you know, there's nothing like actually being there and seeing this and hearing the farmers talk about how special this land is. Apparently, the soil here is really unique. It's the best potato growing soil anywhere, and the amount of land we're talking about is so many acres, so many times the number of acres that people are maybe in Toronto are more familiar with in the Holland Marsh. This is a vastly greater area, the size of half the downtown city of Toronto, the city of Toronto proper.
That's the land under threat. Yeah.
That's the land that they're proposing. Yeah. And it's unimaginable until you actually see it. We saw Meg Ruffman today, the actress, who is walking the perimeter to actually get a sense of the scale of this development. And I just think for people in cities who are not as connected to the land, obviously, as farming people are, they should be very concerned about this, because it will affect them, it will affect all of us. And once the decision is made to go ahead with the quarry, it's almost irreversible. I don't think you can go back and somehow regain this soil.
Thanks very much, Peggy.
Thank you. And thank you for being here on the back of this bumpy school bus all day long in the heat and trekking through many farms as we did. And the fact that you are providing a megaphone for this story to get out to people in the City of Toronto and to the broader community is so important.
Peggy Nash, way out of her riding of Parkdale High Park on the bus in Melanchthon Township.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Here on Goldhawk Fights Back for You. We're live at the moment. I'd like to bring you a little more sound, though, from Melanchthon Township yesterday, riding back into the big city after visiting the farmland. Here's Jonas Shine. He's the New Democratic Party MPP for Davenport, and he's also the party's environment critic.
Here it is, the end of a fairly long day. What are your impressions on what you've seen and your impressions of some of the people you've had a chance to talk to?
Well, I think, first of all, it's great that Matthew Kelway organized this bus tour. You know, I've heard about this issue for a long time. I know some things about it. But being out here all day with both concerned citizens from Toronto and the farmers out here and seeing the land itself and its beauty and its potential, it's really striking. So it brings me with, you know, more energy back to Toronto to work on this issue.
Yeah, it's always best to see something firsthand to really gain an appreciation and understanding for what the issue is, right?
To see it and smell it and taste it. I mean, if for those who aren't on the bus, you know, we can smell the fresh food, you know, the basil that was just picked out of those fields here.
Yeah.
And that's a good reminder that there's food at stake here, that our, you know, our food security is at risk at this project.
When you look at the whole project, as you have been for some time now, is there a number one priority here? I mean, this touches so many different things. It's a food issue, it's an environmental issue, it's even a traffic issue, it's perhaps to a lesser extent a health issue in terms of the limestone dust that will blow around. How do you line up all of those issues yourself?
I mean, I think all of those are absolutely vital, but also it's a governance issue, and this is something where a local community, farm community, but also a city like Toronto has our water supply put at risk, our food supply put at risk, because we're not doing proper planning here. We're allowing, you know, huge corporations to have their way with public good, and that strikes me that we need better protection of our land here, our water and our food.
And don't we need governments? I mean, don't we need governments to take more initiative in terms of protecting all us mere mortals in the first place? I mean, here we are engaged in a people power movement that gets larger every time people gather at a different place. Shouldn't government be doing some of this?
Well, absolutely, right? And, you know, I'm not in the government. I'm an opposition MPP. And I see part of my role is bringing the voice of the community into the legislature and asking for the accountability that we need. I'd like Dalton McGuinty to visit that proposed quarry site and explain to Ontarians how this is even a possibility of happening here.
Yeah. How much faith do you have in the environmental assessment process that will happen here provincially?
Well, I think it's really important. I think it's a good thing that it is happening, but you know, it's going to depend on the continued vigilance and activism of people across Ontario. You know, we're at the site of a food festival where they brought 30,000 people last fall up to that community, and they're doing their part, but we need the government to do their part as well.
We have shaky voices because we're sitting, of course, in the back of the bus on a very bumpy road.
Yeah, we're at the back of the bus, but you know, I think we're on the right track with this issue for sure.
Thank you very much, Jonah.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Jonah Shine. He's the MPP for Davenport in the big city, and he's the environment critic as well. Final word on the bus trip goes to Matthew Kelway. He's the new Democratic Party MP for Beaches, East York, and he's the man who, along with Craig Scott, organized this trip into the country in the first place.
Well, Matthew Kelway, here we are near the end of the day. What do you think?
Oh, it's been a great day. Everybody's had a wonderful time. I think people are actually quite tired, ready for a sleep after the day camp today. It was great going up and seeing the beautiful countryside, wonderful weather.
I think a lot of people were really quite, a combination of fascinated and horrified when Carl Kosak was able to point out the area under threat where the big hole supposedly will go if this thing is approved.
Yeah, and that was the point of the trip, Dale, was to bring people up so that they could actually see it and get the visual, because it's stunning, and I think people were, in fact, as you say, quite stunned to see the scale of this project and to fathom looking across that enormous, beautiful landscape and thinking about all of that being dug up 200 feet down.
It was interesting, I think, for people to, the company's been saying all along, well, you have to understand that our proposal, our land, is not on the Niagara Escarpment. But as one of the organizers of the trip said, okay, we're on the road here. There's the Niagara Escarpment. She takes one step to the left. There's the land owned by the Highland Group of Companies.
That's right, and it butts up right against that protected property, and you can imagine standing there just peering over the edge into this precipice and going down the equivalent of a 24-story building. And to, so I think, yeah, to be there and standing on the escarpment and getting a sense of what that would look like, I think it provides a different perspective on the mega quarry.
What did you think of the detailed explanation from some of the farmers, both about the land, their history on that land?
Yeah, you know, what it brings to people's attention is the cultural devastation that comes along with this mega quarry. It's not just about the environment and the rock and the aggregate, but it is an intrusion into a way of life up north of the city here. Not just an intrusion, it's a destruction of that way of life, frankly. And these are homesteads for people where they've grown things on this land for generations, and to see that threatened, that way of life, I think is quite devastating for a lot of people here.
What's the next step as far as you're concerned? What can be done?
Well, I think what we've got to do is start talking to some of those the corporate entities that sell the produce of these farms. There are a lot of corporations out there that throw the word sustainability around, that talk about corporate social responsibility, and I think we need to have a chat with those corporations and talk to them about what this means. And that if they're going to talk about sustainability and social responsibility, then they got to start doing that walk as well.
And what form would that take?
Well, we need to have a discussion about that, and we need to work closely with the people who are directly affected by the mega quarry, NDAC in particular. To talk through what that kind of strategy would look like. It's got to be done in cooperation with people and sensitive to their way of life and their livelihoods.
What's your feeling on this? Do you think this can be stopped?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't think that you can go into institutional politics and carry or harbor the belief that you can't make these kinds of changes, that these things are hopeless. If that is the case, if I did harbor those thoughts, then I think I would quit and stay at home. I believe that we can do the right thing, that we can change the world. This is one small part of many changes we need to make, and I believe we can do this.
That's Matthew Kelway on the bus yesterday, the new Democratic Party MP for Beaches, East York, organizer of that tour. On the NDAC website, just put NDAC in Google, you can read all kinds of additional factual information on this issue. As Carl Kosak told everybody from the city yesterday, you know, we're not going to fight dirty, but we are going to fight.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.